They're just rumors, honey, I said to my wife, hoping to ease her troubled mind. I don't want something to happen to you, like the others, she said with a fearful look in her eyes. I placed my hand on the side of her head and gently ran my fingers through her hair. It's only for the weekend, and I'll be with the guys. What's the worst that could happen? You could end up being eaten by something or turned into one of those crazed freaks I keep hearing about, she said with an expression I've seldom seen. Listen, I don't have to go. I'm more than happy with staying home. It wasn't my idea anyway, remember? Yeah, I know, she began softly. It was Taylor's idea, and I know you two are close, but I just worry. I know you do, sweetheart. That's why I married you. You're always so kind and loving. I'll call Taylor up right now, and I'll tell him I'm not coming. I'm sure him and John will be just fine. She pursed her lips and sighed. No, don't do that. You can go. Please be careful. I took her hands in mine. When am I ever not careful? I asked with a sly grin. She slapped my chest playfully. Go pack before I change my mind. Yes, ma'am, I sounded off with a mock salute. I heard her huff from behind me, and it made me smile. I loved her, and I knew that her worry was well placed, because the stories of Ridgewood Mountain are no laughing matter. In fact, the cabin me and my two friends are staying in is relatively close to what you might call a FAOA, or Focused Area of Activity. That means strange things have been reported to occur in close vicinity to where we would lay our heads. However, I'm a chaser of the unknown, and this was just another challenge to face head-on, although my wife would disagree. Many people have gone missing up in the mountains, with no logical explanation, and usually without a trace. Obviously, the small squabble I was having with my wife centered around several different rumors about the mountains. One entailed the horrific cannibalization of a group of friends who were hiking during spring break. Another was about a witch who cursed the woods and all who would travel within. And last but not least, some people say the ghosts of all who've gone missing haunt the woods, covering the mountains. Normally, I wouldn't have even thought about going up there, but my buddy Taylor inherited a cabin from his grandfather upon his passing, and it just so happened to be on those mountains. We've been friends for quite some time, so I was surprised I hadn't heard of the cabin until only recently. Nevertheless, I agreed to spend the weekend up there with him and our friend John. Mainly, it was for Taylor. He had been wanting to get away from home, and I conveniently desired to as well, but not for the same reasons he did. I wanted to see if something strange would happen, something unexplainable, while he simply wished for a small vacation. John tagged along as an extra body in case something did happen. He was a big guy and could fend for himself if the need arose. When nightfall came and went, I was eager to get going. Since it was Friday, the stores were packed. We got somewhat of a late start to the trip due to John failing to remember what day it was, and that had us shopping for food during the afternoon rush. But it was only us three guys, and so we didn't need much. The cabin didn't have a stove, but it did have a grill, and luckily it wasn't that warm out yet, so we could rely on a cooler for all of our drinks. It apparently had electricity, but only minimal appliances, which meant I wasn't expecting anything fantastic. After making it through the long lines and out of the store, we set off for the mountains. Our town is located at the base of them, so they weren't that far away. We reached the dirt driveway leading to the cabin within some 30-odd minutes and began to ascend the mountain with Taylor's vehicle. The drive up was quick, and we were soon parked out in front of the ever-elusive cabin that Taylor had continually been speaking of. It wasn't much to look at. From a first glance, you might say it was home to a pack of raccoons, but that didn't stop Taylor from talking about how amazing he thought it was. Man, this is gonna be great, he said enthusiastically. Yeah, it is, said John, always the yes man. I scoffed and proceeded to bring our supplies inside. The cabin had two bedrooms, a bathroom, a living space, and a kitchen. John had already agreed to sleep on the couch, which meant Taylor and I had the bedrooms. They weren't anything special. The bed frames appeared to be handmade and looked rather old. Overall, it was obvious nobody had been there in a long time. I brushed past Taylor on my way out to the car, and he turned to me saying, Hey, be careful being out here alone after the night falls. If any one of us needs to go outside, for whatever reason, make sure at least two people go. What? I asked, perplexed. What do you mean by that? What happens when you're out here alone? He smiled.
Well, let's just say you don't want to find out. I've heard all the rumors too, and believe me, some are less so.
I scratched the side of my neck. Sure, man, I'll try to remember.
If you don't, it could mean your life, he said in a joking manner.
I heard an echo of John laughing from inside the cabin. Clearly, he thought Taylor was hilarious. I walked to the trunk and slung my bag over my shoulder. I was just about to grab the cooler when I heard rustling coming from the trees to the right of me. I shot my head in the direction of the sound and stared into the woods, searching for movement. Suddenly, a squirrel appeared and began to climb up one of the trees.
What's the matter?
Asked Taylor unexpectedly. I hadn't heard him approach due to my concentration, and his interruption startled me.
Dude, don't sneak up on me like that. Sneak up? I walked over here like a normal person. What's got you all tense?
He asked with a furrowed brow. I heard a noise in the trees, but I guess it was just a squirrel.
It could have been, although sometimes daylight can conceal the true nature of things.
That was weird for him to say.
Since when have you been so taken to the spiritual side of things?
It's just a mountain superstition type of stuff. Nothing to worry about.
If you say so.
Yeah, well, anyways, do you need help carrying the cooler? He asked cheerfully.
No, I've got it. Thanks, though. You better go make sure John isn't burning the cabin down already, I said in jest.
Taylor chuckled.
Yeah, you're right. See you inside, then.
I nodded, and he walked back towards the cabin. I turned my eyes to the trees once more, and for an instant, I thought I saw what looked like a head peering out from behind a tree. But after blinking, it was gone. So I shrugged and went inside. John had already made a proper home for himself on the couch, and Taylor was unpacking our food. We only had a few things that were considered perishable. The rest required simple storage. Night was quickly approaching, and we were going to grill some hot dogs, but I remembered the odd conversation between Taylor and I about not being outside alone. I wondered if he meant in general or all the way out in the woods surrounding the cabin. Both John and Taylor were conversing about current events, and I was preparing the food when a strange noise erupted near the kitchen window. It sounded like a pan smacking glass, yet none was shattered. They both looked to me as if I had produced it, but I wasn't taking the fall for something I didn't do.
"Why are you being so loud?" asked Taylor angrily.
"Me? I didn't do anything. I've been over here getting everything ready."
"Well, what was it then? It was pretty loud."
"I'll go outside and check," said John stoically.
"No!" shouted Taylor in protest. "You can't go out there. Not alone, anyway."
"Why not?"
asked John, and I concurred.
"Because it's not safe. Trust me."
I looked to John, who gave me one of those raised eyebrow expressions that let me know he thought Taylor was acting odd. "You know I have to go outside to use the grill, right?" I asked, while holding a paper plate stacked with hot dogs.
"Yeah, I know. I'm going with you each time. In fact, we can just stand out there while they cook," he said sternly.
"Whatever you say, man."
"I'll stay inside and keep the room lively," said John, plopping himself firmly on the couch once again.
The air outside was brisk and moderately warm. The sun was cresting over the horizon and the sounds of nighttime insects were in full swing. I opened the lid of the grill and felt the heat coming off the charcoal burning beneath the metal rack. Taylor was staring towards the tree line and fidgeting in place. I began to lay each hot dog down carefully so they wouldn't roll off, and Taylor grew impatient.
"What's it taking so long? Just put them on there."
"Okay, listen, man. I didn't come all the way out here for you to be an asshole. Got it?" He sighed.
You just don't understand."
"What don't I under..." I didn't get to finish because a new noise came from the trees. I looked at Taylor, who was breathing rapidly, with his eyes fixed on the quickly darkening woods. Then I saw movement. I couldn't tell what it was right away, but as it got closer, I saw. It was a crawling corpse. The corpse looked as though it had dragged itself across the entire mountain just to get to us. It wailed low and raspy with a tinge of anguish, and it chomped its teeth together as if it were nipping at the air. Taylor said something, but it was too quiet to hear, and I stood transfixed on the slowly approaching cadaver.
"Get inside!"
he finally demanded, and I didn't hesitate. I followed him into the cabin, and he slammed the door behind us, locking it in the process.
"What the hell is that?" I shouted harshly.
"The reason I told you not to go outside alone," Taylor shouted back.
"What happened?" asked John from the couch.
"There's a corpse outside, crawling towards the cabin from the forest," I said, turning my head to look at him.
A what?"
"Corpse. The living dead. You know what I'm talking about, John. Don't play dumb."
"I just find it hard to believe," he said with a smug look.
"Fine, be my guest and go outside and see for yourself."
"No, don't do that," commanded Taylor. "Nobody else is going outside tonight."
I resigned and remained quiet. John slumped back down on the couch and kept his mouth shut, and Taylor stared out of the window next to the door. I could hear very faint noises of groaning, but it didn't seem to be getting any closer. Finally, I decided I would confront Taylor again, but this time I'd act civil. I slowly approached him and put my hand on his shoulder. "Hey man, I just freaked out, okay? I don't want to have shouting matches between us anymore. Although this is what I came here for, I never expected to see what I just saw. I wished I was back home because I felt like I was in way over my head." He grinned and nodded.
"Yeah, I know. I'm kind of pissed that we didn't get here earlier. The late start we had because of you-know-who botched our fun."
"And our food," I said before we both started to chuckle. More silence ensued before I broke it with a pertinent question. "So, will you tell me what's going on? Sincerely, I mean, there's an actual zombie out there, or at least it appears to be."
"To tell you the truth, I hardly know. All I can say is that for some reason, strange things happen around this cabin. They're always different, but none are any less dangerous."
"You're saying you've seen this before?" I asked curiously.
"Something similar," he said quickly.
"So it is a zombie?"
I was terrified, although I didn't show it.
"That is a living corpse, presumably belonging to someone who has gone missing on these mountains. My grandfather told me long ago that you shouldn't engage with any strange things you see up here, or else you might end up like one of them."
"This seems crazy. I mean, I can see it with my own two eyes, but I don't know."
"Yeah, you're telling me," he said quietly.
Guys? Asked John from the couch. We both turned to look at him, and he was pointing to the window directly in front of him. As I followed his finger, I saw something staring into the cabin.
"Don't look at it!" shouted Taylor, but it was already too late. I had seen every aspect of it. It had scraggly, thin hair, white as snow, and its face was pressed against the glass. I recognized the way it looked because it had the same head I had seen earlier, but had disappeared in the blink of an eye. The wretched thing had a mouth of wicked fangs, dripping with blood, and its foul breath began to fog the window. I would say its eyes were fixed on something in particular, but it didn't have any eyes. They were just empty sockets of black. John threw himself over the back of the couch and stayed low to the floor.
What is that?" he asked in a trembling voice.
"I've never seen that before," Taylor muttered under his breath.
"What do we do? Are we safe here?" I asked worriedly.
"I think so."
"You think so?"
"Yeah, I was hoping for more than that," said John from the floor.
"Nothing has ever gotten in before, that's what I mean."
Tap, tap, thump, tap. The creature at the window began to thump its frail fists against the glass. All three of us turned to look at it, despite Taylor's warning to the contrary. The creature groaned and drooled as it continued its weak pounding.
"I think it's trying to get in," said John.
"If we ignore it, it might go away," said Taylor, who seemed unsure of himself.
"And what if it doesn't?" I asked calmly.
"I don't know," he said in defeat.
Suddenly, John put his ear to the wood beneath us.
I think something's under the floor."
Then a rotting hand shattered the floorboards and wrapped around John's head. He began to yell in terror as whatever was under the cabin tried to pull him down with it. I ran over and stomped on the exposed arm, and the creature below wailed like the corpse from the forest. John was released, and he struggled to his feet like he was trying to stand on marbles. I looked into the hole in the floor and saw a pair of milky white eyes staring back at me. The corpse had crawled under the cabin. I shot a glance at the windows where the other creature was and noticed it was no longer there, and a deep fear filled my bones. I thought you said we were safe in here, shouted John.
His face was bleeding where the corpse had torn into his skin with its dirty and dead nails.
I said, I think it is. I never said it was, Taylor shouted back.
Guys, the thing in the window, it's gone.
They both looked to the window, and then a blood-curdling scream came from outside, pulling our attention away from the glass.
Somebody needs help, shouted John, who was already running to the front door.
No, you idiot, begged Taylor. It's a trick. Nobody is out there.
Another scream.
Please, someone help. I'm lost and afraid.
The scream was accompanied by a woman's voice who sounded like she was in danger. John did not adhere to Taylor's warning. He sprinted to the front door and flung it open. Taylor latched onto his arm so that he wouldn't leave, but John was bigger than both of us, and he tossed Taylor away with ease.
John, no! He shouted once more.
I'm not entertaining your stupid games, Taylor. I'm helping whoever is out there.
And then he ran into the forest. The door was left open for a few minutes, long enough for us to hear the horrifying cries of John from somewhere beyond the trees. When his agonizing yells reached us, Taylor slammed the door once again. As I looked to the window, the creature had returned. Taylor began to weep.
Damn him! Why didn't he listen?
I don't know, man. What do we do?
We have to survive until morning. Everything seems to end when the sun rises.
Well, maybe John's all right? I wondered, reassuringly.
No, he's not, said Taylor confidently. The wailing outside seemed to double during our conversation.
More are gathering now, he added. More? You mean more corpses?
He nodded. By now, I imagine a whole mob of them are out there. One of them might even be John.
Don't say that shit.
I'm sorry, he said quietly.
The creature at the window started to pound against the glass again, which set my nerves alight. The orchestra of chaos outside the cabin walls was testing every ounce of willpower I had in my body. I wanted to run, just like John, but I knew that would be suicide. Taylor had his head down, and he remained that way for a long time. But then, something knocked on the door. Taylor shot his head up and looked at me.
Don't open it, no matter what you hear on the other side.
I nodded and waited quietly. More knocking came, followed by a familiar voice.
Hey, guys, can you let me in? It's pretty cold out here.
It was John's voice, but it wasn't normal. There was a certain breathiness to it, as if his lungs had been crushed.
It's not him, said Taylor, who had resigned completely to his fear.
Did you know this would happen? I asked sincerely. He shook his head.
I didn't think it would be this bad. Believe me, I never thought it would come to this.
I wish you would never have invited me up here.
I know, I'm sorry.
Come on, guys, I'm fine. Just open the door and you'll see.
Go away, shouted Taylor.
The creature had disappeared from the window again. Each time it did, I felt my spine shudder. Where was it going? I heard heavy footsteps retreat from the door, and I breathed a sigh of relief. But when I looked back at the window, I nearly screamed. John was staring into the cabin, but his stomach was ripped open and his intestines were unfurled. Taylor noticed him at the same time I did and began to breathe rapidly again. We both stood up and backed further away from the window, and suddenly, John bashed his head through the glass and started crawling into the cabin.
Follow me, quickly,
demanded Taylor.
Guys, it's not so bad,
said John with a mouthful of blood while climbing across the jagged glass. I ran behind Taylor to one of the bedrooms and he closed the door behind us. He locked the door with a lock I deem insufficient to keep the likes of John out. But the fact that we were now trapped in a back room was more terrifying than John himself. The room had only one window and it was covered by what looked like sheet metal. The cabin began to fill with the moans and groans of creatures we couldn't see, and the sounds grew unbearably loud. Taylor sat in a corner and stared at the floor, and I stood near the door.
I never meant for any of this to happen, he mumbled.
I believe you. Let's just focus on staying alive.
Fierce pounding began on the door to the bedroom, and I reeled away from it.
Let me in, guys. It's cold out here,
said the voice of John. More screams pierced the air outside the cabin, and I could hear scurrying under the floorboards. It was looking like we wouldn't survive until the morning. "Just stay quiet," said Taylor. I listened and didn't say a word. I heard the dragging of dirt below us. John continued to pound on the door, and the wailing of corpses was endless. It was driving me mad. I wanted to bang my head against the wall in the hope that would somehow stop the torture. We sat like that in the chorus of the damned for the entire night. At one point, I managed to fall asleep, and when I awoke, all sound was gone. Taylor was no longer in the corner, and the door to the bedroom was open. Anxiety swelled in my stomach as I stood up to walk into the hall of the cabin. However, I felt relief when I saw him standing in the kitchen, alive and well. "How long have you been out here?" I asked while observing the state of the cabin. Every window had been smashed, and the front door was ripped off its hinges. The floorboards had deep claw marks in them, and so did the walls. There were trails outside that I could only assume were paths the corpses made as they dragged themselves to the cabin. "Since dawn," was all he said. "What do we do now?" "We wait for the police to get here." "When and how did you call them?" "This morning. The cabin has a landline, but it stops working at night. Besides, I've already found him," he sighed. "It's not something you want to see. Trust me when I say that. He's just beyond the trees. Well, what's left of him is." "What will we tell them?" "I've already told them that he ran out into the night raving about hearing a voice of a woman. We tried to stop him, but his determination superseded our ability to keep him inside, and then he never came back." "Well, that's the truth, more or less." "Yeah, I told them I found his body as well, and that it looked like a bear had got to him. They told me to stay away from it, so that's why I'm in here." "What about the state of the cabin? It's in shambles and there's blood everywhere." "I thought about that too. I'm going to tell them that it had been vandalized, which is why we were up here. To fix it up," he said solemnly. "They won't notice the blood. Trust me. In fact, they probably won't even come into the cabin. Something about this place, it tricks the mind." I let my body relax. "Man, I can't even begin to explain what's going on or what happened." "Don't. The more you rationalize it, the more it haunts you." Those were the last words Taylor really spoke to me. The police came and confirmed that some sort of animal definitely got to John. They told us to go home after a few hours, and Taylor took me back to my place without so much as a single letter spoken. I got out and walked inside and didn't look back. Since then, we haven't spoken, and I get the feeling that Taylor blames himself for John's death. I would as well if I were him. But ultimately, it was John's desire to be a helping hand that got him killed. I won't say I got what I wanted or what I was looking for, because I could have never expected anything like what we experienced. My wife greeted me in the living room as I entered the home and said that I looked terrible. When she asked what had happened, I simply responded with, "You were right. I should have listened to you from the start." Thank you for listening to Mrs. Nightmare Storytime. I hope to meet you again. And in the meantime, remember, stay off of Ridgewood Mountain.